The sales pitch on dope is that it relaxes you, it sets your mind free, it makes you more creative, it's harmless, it's recreational. But the biology tells a different story, right?
It does. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. And Fred, I need some advice.
Okay.
So do you have any neighbors?
I do have neighbors.
Got neighbors, yeah. Do any of your neighbors keep honeybees?
No. I know people who have honeybees.
Is that right?
They've given me honey.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So you have some experience in the honeybee area.
A little bit, okay. Yeah.
So I have a neighbor, and he keeps honeybees. And when we first became aware of the honeybees, we were delighted because it just sounds wonderful that there's honeybees,
yeah.
Which means there would be honey, and we're friendly with our neighbor. Now, he doesn't live on the property. It's an empty lot, and only his bees live there. And for a couple of years, everyone has lived in perfect harmony, us and the bees, and everything's been wonderful. But as of late, the bees have become hostile.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been stung now twice. Now, I haven't been stung by a bee, Fred, since I was like 7.
Yeah.
But now in the last 2 weeks, I've been stung, well, like just 4 times in one setting.
Wow.
The last time they attacked.
So you go outside and you just get stung.
So go outside, do some yard work, and the bees start swarming, and so something has changed in our relationship with the neighbor's honeybees. And so the advice I need, Fred, is how do you approach a neighbor about his honeybees that have become hostile without damaging the relationship with the neighbor and having the, I don't want the neighbor to think that I just complain about everything, but
yeah.
I could show him the wounds on my body. And anyway, it's a delicate situation.
It sounds like it. I don't know. Go over there and tell your bees to stay out of my yard. Have you talked to him yet?
Oh, I haven't had the opportunity to speak with him yet. But the thing is the bee stung my wife, and now that the bee stung my wife, now I'm mad.
She was probably laughing before, right? Oh, it's no big deal.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, right. She was. Oh yeah. I took a lot of abuse about whining about being stung by a bee until she got stung, and that now. Wow. Anyway, so now I'm mad about it, but I don't want to.
I think your place is their place now, is what's going on, right?
Well, we don't know. We've done some research, and it only happens around dusk, and we don't know if it's a seasonal thing. We read that it's quite possible that the hive has a particularly aggressive queen.
Oh, okay.
So apparently honeybee hive, their behavior can sometimes depend on the attitude of the queen. So they got this bad attitude queen who's making everybody into like mad, aggressive soldiers, whereas another queen, it might be a whole different situation. Anyway, yeah. We've tried to do some research to figure out what to
about
do.
Committing queen aside?
Well, so this was another thing. Where does one draw the line in mounting some sort of attack against the bees if it becomes necessary? And then is there a technology available that would allow me to either stop the bees? I don't think there's not like a drone technology, or AI's not going to help me with putting up a screen to stop the bee. But maybe there's some audio electromagnetic.
Some kind of precise targeting to take out the leaders, like
just to take out the
queen. Seconds of this battle.
Yeah. We need to, I might need to call on the 82nd Airborne. Anyway, I just want, in fact, I'll put that out for the audience too. If you have any advice on how can I diplomatically and delicately and with tact, and I want to remain friends with the neighbor, but let him know that his bees are out of control.
And they don't live there, just their bees do.
Just okay. Yeah, they don't live there yet. They may eventually, okay. But
gotcha.
Anyway, right. So yeah, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the back of my neck where he got me. Not he. I think it had to be multiple bees because yeah. I think they can only sting you one time and then.
Okay.
Like their yeah. stinger.
They're
falls
not like wasps. Wasps are bad, man. They can sting you multiple yeah. times.
Yeah.
I hadn't been stung my whole life, and then I got stung like 3 years ago.
Is that right?
Near a rock area in my backyard.
Yeah.
And that thing, you know, it hurts when it first happens.
Uh-huh.
But then it hurts and it hurt and it hurt for like an hour. I got mad. I went to Home Depot.
Oh.
And I loaded up on wasp killer. I went to town.
Yeah.
This ain't happening again.
So this was not a wasp who got you.
Not on my lawn.
Oh. Yeah. A wasp, huh?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, the honeybee's not as bad as a wasp, from what I understand. Yeah. But the thing is that it itches and itches and itches for days. And oh man. Anyway. So okay, well, anyway, if y'all have any advice, help me out. How do I diplomatically
email into Doug@rsr.org?
Yeah, yeah. Let me know what to do about. But Fred, we want to talk about a good friend of ours, a listener, Josh. He sent us an email discussing fertility and dope.
That's right.
Yeah.
So fertility he pointed us to this this video, and it's from this extremely popular channel, Huberman Lab, and we've done a show before on alcohol.
That's right,
and its impact on on us,
right,
on our bodies, and that's Dr. Andrew Huberman. So he had a Dr. Natalie Crawford on this episode, and it was just last week, just on April 13th, and it was titled "How Women Can Improve Their Fertility and Hormone Health."
Yeah,
and. Yeah.
This caught our eye because Dr. Crawford is a double board certified OBGYN. I'm not sure what the second board was. The first board was obstetrics. The second was gynecology. I'm not sure how that works. that's it. OBGYN and a reproductive endocrinologist. That's probably the second board. And the segment that Josh flagged us about was toward the end of the interview on the April 13th segment. And it was called Cannabis and Detriments to Egg and Sperm Health. And it's especially relevant, Fred, as we're here in the state of Colorado, where we record the show when I'm in the state of Colorado, yeah. Which we're in right now.
In the studio.
Which was Colorado was the first state to legalize dope back in 2012. The vote happened, and then they started actually selling it openly and legally, as if nothing was wrong, mm-hmm. in 2014, which was shocking. It was just shocking. I just remember driving by and saying, there's a dope store now, right there in front of God and everybody. There's no cops coming. They're just selling dope.
Yeah.
I remember it was shocking. The retail sale of dope drugs to people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that has obviously normalized not only cannabis, but pretty much all drugs everywhere are now pretty much normalized.
Yeah, so, sure seems like it. Yeah. But, you know, this isn't the first time that we've talked about marijuana on the show.
Oh, no.
We've done several past shows, and we also have a research page at RSR called Negative Effects of Marijuana. Scientific research shows pot is harmful. And so listeners can go find this long-running collection that Bob started and that we've continued to add to,
yep.
of these studies and news items on the damage that pot can do, cannabis. And you can find that at rsr.org/pot.
Pot.
Yeah, that's yes. right.
Yeah. I had a contractor at my home recently, and we were talking about life, and he said that he got off all alcohol and all drugs, but he still uses cannabis, he said. So I found that's the way the new pothead lingo is, I don't smoke pot, I use cannabis. So cannabis is a much more sophisticated, because there's more syllables. If it's just pot, you just sound like a pothead, because you can just barely get out one. But if you're using cannabis, so he uses cannabis, and so he's not working for us anymore. Yep. Anyway, you know, the sales pitch on dope is that it relaxes you, it sets your mind free, it makes you more creative, it's harmless, it's recreational, but the biology tells a different story, right?
It does. And so in this segment on the Huberman Show, on his interview with Dr. Crawford, she says that cannabis use is one of the most concerning things she's seen in clinical practice. when it comes to fertility.
Uh-huh.
So I want to go ahead and listen to a clip from that interview. So let's roll that.
The do nots, I think broadly as don't smoke, don't drink. I was shocked, but I need to ask to learn what I found was that 15% of women in the United States report having used cannabis in some form or another while pregnant. Does that concern you?
Cannabis use is probably the most concerning thing that I see in clinical practice. So both, you can just say if that many are using it in pregnancy, let's extrapolate to how many are using it beforehand. Mm-hmm. And ultimately something that we are just now getting robust data on, because it's hard to study something when it's illegal. Mm-hmm. All cannabis use is hugely detrimental to sperm, for sure, across the board, right? Both production, the quantity of sperm, testosterone production, also the quality of the sperm, specifically the DNA fragmentation inside the head of the sperm, to the degree that female partners who conceive from a male partner who's using cannabis have much higher miscarriage rates than partners who do not utilize cannabis. And I will say clinically in the IVF lab, when I see embryos halt at that male developmental stage on day 3, we say, oh, here's a young couple, they've got no embryos and we were expecting them to have some. When we go back 9 out of 10 times, he is using cannabis that he previously denied. So it is one of the most movable factors right now in this country for improving, you know, fertility outcomes. For women, cannabis use in the prior year can decrease the eggs you get at egg retrieval by 25% and can decrease fertilization rates by 28% and can increase miscarriage rates, therefore decreasing live birth rates. So huge numbers in science, right? I mean, like, we get excited when something's a few, you know, percentage points different, but these numbers are really high to the degree that it's really easy to sit here and say, if you're trying to get pregnant the fastest, if you want to have the best pregnancy outcomes, or even you want to have the best hormones you can, have longevity of your ovaries, or have the best sperm counts or the most testosterone, cannabis use should not be a part of that. And THC crosses the placenta directly. And THC levels in, you know, edibles are usually the highest. So I think it's really important that sometimes people are like, oh, well, I don't smoke it, so I'm okay. We want to be really careful that this is not something your body is meant to be exposed to when we want to think about the core of how your body's meant to function.
Okay. Well, thank you, doctor. But that was kind of painful, Fred, to hear from a doctor free of any moral judgment about anything. Mm-hmm. So you notice how she talked about using cannabis. I mean, she's not the contractor at my house, but she speaks the same language. Now I know why he says that. Yeah. He probably learned that from his doctor. You know, you're not a pothead. You're just using cannabis. But she said using cannabis shouldn't be a part of, and we need to be careful. And it's just, that's a doctor free of any moral judgments about anything. And that was a little uncomfortable for me, Fred.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, what she's talking about isn't a fringe claim. I mean,
that's
one of the reasons we wanted to show that clip. So she says that cannabis, well, let's call it what it is, pot.
Let's call it pot.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yep. Yeah. Dope. She says that this pot harms sperm across the board, production, quantity, testosterone, and even DNA quality inside the sperm. I mean, we've known about that, but I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
And she also says female partners. And you know, it's hard for me to even say that, female partners.
Female partners of men.
Yeah, of men.
That's way too many words to describe. Yeah. Okay, but
so she says the female, you know, partners of men use pot have much higher miscarriage rates. So these women have higher miscarriage rate. And here's what's really interesting. Prior year cannabis use can reduce eggs retrieved by 25% and fertility rates by 28%. This is even if you use it in a prior year. And she's a doctor from the IVF world. I know she's embedded in that. So
right.
I want to make it clear on Real Science Radio, we do not endorse that at all.
No.
In fact, we're hoping to have a fertility doctor sometime in the near future, hopefully.
Right.
That can get into more of the natural fertility and things like, I think you know about.
Yeah, the NAPRO technology. Yeah. Natural procreation technology. Anyway, it's outcomes are better. Insurance covers more of it. And you're not involved in an industry that kills people, which killing people is wrong.
Yeah.
Getting drunk is wrong. Getting high is wrong. And that's why it's bad for you. Well, it turns out that not only is it wrong, it's bad for you physically. And of course, now the doctor there with Dr. Huberman, she's talking about her field and how it affects her patients. And so naturally, she's focused on, you know, the physical problems that cannabis use can lead to. But we're opposed to what she does. I mean, she's in in vitro fertilization, and we're opposed to that for moral, biblical reasons, you know. And we'll talk a bit more about that later. But the broader point here about dope is that dope appears to be undermining fertility levels across the board. And Fred, what's wild is every week, it seems like, I have a kind of an alternative news feed. I don't watch Good Morning America or the Today Show. That's not where I get my news. I have kind of a right-wing
The View. Oriented. You don't watch The View?
Don't watch The View. Haven't caught The View in a while. But it seems like weekly there's a story about the fertility crisis in the Western world and China, by the way, and Japan. It's not just European and American, and it's a crisis across the board. And these stories come out weekly, and at the same time, everyone's just la la la. Let's legalize drugs, and everything is okay. And it seems like it's going to become obvious that these things are related. The fact that we legalize getting wasted turns out to harm the future of civilization.
Yeah.
Even at the fundamental physical level of procreation. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So Dr. Huberman, later in this episode, and I'm not sure we'll play the clip, but he mentions about when he was younger, growing up, it was this big overpopulation scare.
That oh!
Too many people.
Remember?
Yeah. And he's like, now it's kind of going the other direction, just to your point. I know Japan, they were advertising, trying to get people to have more kids.
Yeah.
There was huge problems across the globe.
Oh, tremendous.
And he mentioned that, you know, to his credit. So Colorado, unfortunately, like you said, it was one of the early states. But what was alarming to me when I looked into this, almost half the states have legalized it. There's 24 states, two territories, and of course, the District of Columbia. They allow pot use, adult pot use. And, you know, recent additions include states like Missouri and Ohio. They're not, you know, blue states.
No.
Montana's even legalized it.
Yeah. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think all 50 states have some form of medical marijuana. So, practically has that was the camel's nose under the tent, mm-hmm. so to speak. Thank you, George Soros, and all the efforts that he made. But yeah, even these so-called red states have legalized getting wasted, which is what it is. I'm sorry. I know that there's a lot of functional potheads now, and pretty much everyone you interact with in your professional life and at the grocery store and at the auto mechanics. I mean, I'm in California, Fred. Almost everywhere I go reeks of marijuana. Literally reeks of marijuana. And people literally reek of marijuana. And you're like, wow, you just came into work. And
like, how did you know how it's what it smelled like?
Yeah, well, back when it was illegal, yeah. Yeah, I learned the hard way, Fred, and I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry that I did. I really wish.
Back when.
I wish I'd have never been exposed to any of that, but we were, and I was, and I learned a valuable lesson, I suppose, but I didn't need to learn it. And the thing is, Fred, is now it's normalized. There's no hiding it. There's no shame. There's no restraint.
Yeah. And back when we were growing up, it was more of a kind of the rebellious side of culture, right?
Yeah.
Did pot as part of your teenage rebellious years. And then you had the whole, you know, Woodstock and all that stuff in the 60s.
Yeah. And then you had my mom in 10th grade, I think it was. And my brother and I laughed at our mom because our mom said at some point, she said, I think you're all on drugs. She yelled. And Fred, later on, my brother and I, reflecting back, we realized that actually she was correct.
I was going to say, how did she know?
She was right.
Yeah.
Turns out mom was right. Everyone was on drugs. And it turns out that it was bad. It was bad for us. It was bad for society. It was bad for the future of civilization. It's bad for the condition of your soul. And it's bad for something as basic as procreation. Yeah.
Yep. And you know, Doug, there's another point that she made that's really interesting is this THC, it crosses the placenta directly.
Yeah.
So this isn't just about whether someone can get pregnant. It's also about what happens to the baby after conception. And I know we've talked about that on prior shows. You're affecting your baby.
Right.
And this stuff. So,
yeah. So this isn't just about you. It's about having an effect on another person for whom you are responsible to God, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So then the conversation that turned to nicotine, which I thought was interesting. She said that cigarette smoking can reduce egg count, contribute to earlier menopause, and then that oral nicotine pouches are tanking counts, in her words. So that's a remarkable statement given how heavily nicotine products are being pushed, Doug, to young people right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so the bigger picture really here, Fred, is we're told that the idea of restraint that's in the Bible, biblical concepts of restraint are outdated, and that sobriety is old-fashioned. Any concept of self-control is viewed as oppression or repression. But it's funny how then these are the people who worship science. Yeah. And then the science comes along and shows them that all these things that were in the Bible about restraint and control and temperance, right? They're all backed up by the science too.
Yeah. So I want to thank again, Joshua, for sending this in. It's exactly the kind of story people need to hear and we need to update people on, and especially in places like Colorado. You know, where legalization is old news, but the biological fallout is still being badly underestimated.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyways, you know, before we get to our next headline, Doug, I did want to take an opportunity to do the interesting fact of the
week. No. I thought we had a sponsor.
Well, we do have a sponsor.
Oh, we have a sponsor. Okay.
Jim in Delaware. So we'd like to thank Jim.
Jim in Delaware. Have they legalized dope in Delaware yet? Were they on the list? Delaware wasn't Delaware the first state?
I don't know, actually.
Delaware was the first state, and the first state that ratified the Constitution, if I'm not mistaken. And then Colorado was the first state to legalize dope. So we go from Colorado to Delaware. And thank you for sponsoring the Interesting Fact of the Week, Jim in Delaware. I really appreciate it. Thank you, sir. May I have another? I'm ready whenever you are, Fred. Let me have a bit of caffeine. Did she say anything about caffeine? I mean, I'm not looking to have any more kids, so. But I'm sure caffeine's probably not that good either. But in moderation, temperance, moderation.
Okay, so here we go. This is the interesting fact of the week. What is the name of the specialized cell division that creates sperm and eggs with half the normal chromosome number? What's the name for that specialized cell division?
Wow. I'm going to guess that it has more than one syllable.
Okay.
And that's about as close as I'm going to be able to get to the answer. I don't even think I can begin to guess at an answer for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
It starts with my...
Myosynthesis.
Do you have any sisters?
Myosynthesis.
Stop. Myosis. But,
meiosis.
Meiosis, yes. Meiosis, correct.
Meiosis.
So it reduces the chromosome number by half in sperm and egg cells so that when fertilization occurs, the right number is restored.
And that all happened accidentally. It evolved after several efforts that didn't work. And then it suddenly found a way to perfectly divide that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's ridiculous to think.
It reduces the humans. It reduces our chromosome count from... 46
to 23.
Correct.
46 to 23. All right.
All right.
And that didn't happen by accident. That was designed by God. And it's pretty fantastic and amazing. And we should give him glory for that, such an amazing design.
Yeah.
And so. And
again, to try to imagine how that could happen over time. Come on. Random mutations, mistakes in the DNA.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. All right. Now,
Hey,
by the way. On the way here, Fred.
Okay.
I read Sun Puzzles, Ellen McHenry's new book. Yeah. It's a mind blower. It's a mind blower. When it's a yet another example, Fred, of how many dogmas there are in science. Dogmas about the sun. I personally, not that I had thought that much about it, but I had never before questioned the idea that it was in fact nuclear fusion that drives the sun.
Yep.
I just never questioned it because that's what I was told. And it turns out that that's virtually impossible that that's true. It's virtually impossible for that to be true. And there's all kinds of evidence that a first-year physics student, chemistry student, first-year studying electrical engineering, whatever, that makes it impossible. And that's all been ignored by people with PhDs and who write textbooks, and it's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, well, that's common across the board, though, right?
Yeah,
there's
things I know.
That falsify your claims, I mean, that are at least they're difficult to explain.
Yeah.
But when they keep coming in like that, okay, if you have one case where something's hard to explain,
okay.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this last, Danny Faulkner was in town not that long ago, and we went out, they had this stargazing thing, and someone asked him, you know, what's the most compelling evidence, and he likes to use the eclipse, you know, with the whole thing with the moon is
400 times closer.
Yes.
And, but 400 times smaller.
Yeah. And for all that to line up, you know, that's one coincidence. You can call it, if you want to call it coincidence.
Sure. You could.
When do the coincidences,
yeah.
Did I say that right?
Coincidi.
Coincidi.
Yeah.
When do they get to a point where, hey, look, this isn't coincidence. This is design. This is obviously God is behind this.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, if you have just one, but the problem, like in this book with the sun puzzles, it's not just one. There's so many hurdles.
There's more than a half a sense. More than a half a dozen. Yeah, more than a half a dozen questions. Not really just questions, problems that make it. It's just not possible. And but we don't want to give away the book because we want you to buy the book. So
yeah, buy the book, and we'll do a show on it. Hopefully,
yeah, it's great
soon. So it's really good, really good stuff.
It's really
great. That's in our store, rsr.org, or go to store.rsr.org. That's the quickest way to get to our store.
Go to the store, check it out.
We've got people ordering this.
Yes,
and other books that we've got in our store. We've got a lot of new stuff. We got the 9th edition is coming in June. We apologize again that this has been delayed, but it's coming soon.
Yeah. It's on a ship. The ship does not have to go through the Strait of Hormuz because it's not coming from that side. So we hope that it'll be here, and we plan to start shipping around mid-June.
Yeah.
And by the way, Sun Puzzles gets not only into the sun, but a whole bunch of other really interesting facts and observations, not mathematical extrapolations, but observations about galaxies and stars and all kinds of really interesting stuff.
Yeah. And while you're in the store, if you can sponsor a show, get your name mentioned on the interesting fact.
That's right.
That helps us stay on the air, helps us cover the cost for our great video producers. And then the radio, KLTT, 12:30 p.m., right at lunch hour.
Yeah.
I'm in Denver, so we're in a primetime slot every Friday.
That's right.
So everything you do through the store helps us out.
That's right. Sponsor a show.
And I think in about 1 week, at the end of the month, Jesus Light and Design, our first RSR book,
that's right,
is coming out, and we'll have a hard copy and a paperback version that you can order through the store, and we're going to include that within the beginning when we send that out.
That's right. So the shipping's been delayed a little bit in the beginning, so we're going to throw in a free book, and then if you sponsor a show, you could be like Jim in Delaware and become world famous being mentioned here. By the way, our show is available to billions of viewers. Billions.
That's right.
Our show's available to the network we're on is literally in the home of every single person on the planet.
Yeah.
And in their pocket, right? On their phone. So, yeah, we're on the biggest network ever. So,
speaking of news, Doug, so our next news item comes from our good old buddies at Nature Magazine. You know, creationist magazine?
Yeah, Nature. Uh huh.
Well, they're kind of a creationist magazine. They just don't know it.
That's right.
So, this is just from last week on tax day, April 15th.
Okay.
So, this one is titled Landmark Ancient Genome Study Shows Surprise Acceleration of Human Evolution.
Huh? An acceleration of human evolution. Oh.
So right out of the gate, Doug, we got to translate that headline, you know, from Darwinian. I guess it's Darwinian.
Okay.
Darwinian, what would a language be called? So there's English, there's Japanese, Darwinese.
Darwish. Darwish, no, the Darwish sounds too, Darwinese? Yeah, let's go with Darwinese. Okay.
Plain English. So,
okay.
So this is not evidence of humans evolving from apes, and it certainly isn't evidence for, you know, what we, you know, molecules to man evolution. What they're actually describing in this article is the changing frequency of existing genes and traits within already human populations.
That's right. That's right. Because these are actually fully human skeletons, fully human genomes from fully human populations. Nobody found like a half man, quarter chimp accountant buried in a cave. That's not what this was about. They found people. And they found shifts in the traits that these people shared as the people spread into new climates and their diets changed and there was disease pressure, there was a different environment, all of that.
Yeah, so what they're calling accelerated human evolution, they love to get the word evolution in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really just recent human diversification. So there's variation in skin tone, immunity, metabolism, and other traits that can spread quickly through human populations by migration, founder effects, marriage patterns, and what secular scientists call selection. And I'd qualify that term. So we tend to favor ICR's idea of continuous environmental tracking,
yep,
that God built a great deal of adaptive diversity into the human genome from the start. You know, he's the ultimate right programmer. And that could help explain how this kind of diversification happened so quickly. You know, the natural selection is something that actually a creationist came up with. So there is a concept where you can see how selection can work, but where and if there is selection, it's only working on pre-existing genes. It's not evolving anything.
That's right.
If it's doing anything, it's shuffling things around and de-evolving in some cases.
Right, right. It's a smart system choosing the best available adaptation for the environment or the condition. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, the evolutionists, as usual, they're doing our work for us. They run this massive study. They give it an evolution headline, and then the actual data sound a lot like what creationists have been describing and analyzing and building a good data and good studies on for many, many years. Humanity... is from the creationist perspective, which is reality from the Bible.
Yeah.
Humanity started as a smaller population and then diversified rapidly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that obviously fits very nicely within the biblical time frame, right?
Yeah.
So after the enormous population bottleneck of Noah's flood, and that's what it would be called, population genetics. They call it a bottleneck.
Right.
And it's followed by the dispersion, you know, from the Tower of Babel.
Right.
And so you'd expect rapid spreading of existing genetic diversity into many regions of the world. And, you know, you think of like in the Far East, they've got, you know, the slightly slanted eyes, right?
Uh-huh.
That's like one tiny mutation, but then they all have it. They're kind of in their group. A lot of traits like that, people don't realize how similar we are. You know, our skin color, we're all the same color, actually. It's just slightly different variations
in
the alleles and whatnot, where we may be a darker shade of, you know. I've always told people, I'm not white. You know, I'm not white, Doug. I am not this, okay?
No,
do I look like I'm white?
No, you're not really.
A melanin.
Yeah,
and it's just a slight variation.
That's right.
In the genome.
Yeah.
So that can happen easily. You can have again this rapid diversification across the globe, and again, it just fits really well with the Bible.
That's right. Small founding groups. They move into colder areas. They move into hotter areas. Coastal. Some are on the coast, down at sea level. Some are up in the mountains. Different traits become more common, and certain immune profiles help in one place and other traits help in another place. It doesn't require new creatures evolving upward, just human populations expressing built-in diversity.
Yep. And then if you think about it, the timeline problem that from their point of view, actually, you know, they say much of this acceleration happened in the last 10,000 years. Well, that's really a remarkably recent window in their time frame of millions and millions of years.
Right, so, yeah.
You know, we just say, well, right. Yeah, post-flood humanity expanding, multiplying, you know, migrating and filling the earth. That's what it is.
That's right, yeah. So, it's about 4,000 and change, somewhere in there.
Yep.
It's exactly what Genesis describes. Be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. And then what do scientists find? A burst of population, migration, and diversification in the recent past.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so Nature Creationist Magazine. This was definitely an interesting article. And it's not evidence that humans came from animals. It's evidence that human populations changed and diversified recently and rapidly in their time frame. In our time frame, you know, 6,000 years is, or 5,000 or whatever it is since the flood, that's a long time.
A long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I'm approaching 60 and they tell me that's old. So 60 seems like a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, 4,500 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, you're getting close to codger status.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, getting to be a grouchy, grumpy old man is where I'm headed. But anyway, but what you described and what we described from the actual article is just way different from the headline they gave it, Fred.
It is. And, you know, I think a more honest title would be Large DNA Study Finds Rapid Recent Diversification of Human Populations. That would have been a more honest title.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. But hey, that headline might accidentally help people understand the data, Fred.
Well, we can't have that.
No, we don't want people actually understanding reality. That's a threat to science.
Yep. So, well, you know, we've had Dr. Rob Carter. He was the first person I ever interviewed on Real Science Radio when Bob was on assignment. You know,
that's right. Yeah.
Like, hey, can you do the radio show? I'm like, no, I need you, Bob. You know, that first time you got to do it yourself. Well,
yeah,
I got to interview Dr. Rob Carter. He's been on the show. We need to have him and or Nathaniel Jensen. We had him on. They're the experts on this, you know, whole population genetics. So good to talk to them about this. And, you know, we've had Sal Cordova on. Yeah,
I was going
to
say Sal.
Sal too. And, you know, interesting with Sal, he emailed us something just this last week. And when you get right down to it with him and the times he's been on our show, his argument, one of his arguments has long been that common ancestor story is already in serious trouble. So we even get to this whole chimps and humans are 98% similar, all that nonsense,
right.
You know, we evolved from some common chimp ancestor. We don't even get there because of what Sal has uncovered with this whole problem at the protein level.
Yeah.
So
if you can't even get out of the protein level, I mean, how are you going to get even to the chimp?
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. Sal pointed us, let's see, in his email, it was the article from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences paper. And it had titled, here, I had to write it down, Fred, because Descent from a Common Ancestor Restricts Exploration of Protein Sequence Space.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
And this is where it gets interesting. So, you know, as Sal has pointed out, the protein families, they don't have a common ancestor.
Yeah.
And so the paper refers to Luca. Star Wars thing. And that's the so-called last universal common ancestor.
And
then they made this statement. They say, a much more likely scenario appears that most of the protein functional and sequence diversity found in Luca do not share a common ancestor. Boom.
I mean, that's really remarkable. I mean,
it just explodes molecular evolution. It doesn't happen.
Because, I mean, even if within their own framework, they're acknowledging that most of that protein functional and sequence diversity in this so-called Luca, they're admitting it may not share a common ancestor. Then the old smooth Darwinian story, it starts to get really lumpy. Yeah. I mean, how does that even work? Are they allowed to do that?
Yeah. This is really just the nail. It's a big nail in the coffin. You know, there's so many nails in the coffin. But this one's like a big, you know, that one that thick, a spike that goes right through the center of it. I mean, how many nails are in this coffin? I mean,
nails in the coffin. That brings us right back, Fred, to where we started with the smoking dope and, you know, they call cigarettes coffin nails.
Oh.
Coughing nails. Did I say coughing nails? Yeah. I think I said.
Too.
Yeah, that too. So this is not just another coffin nail for the story of Darwinian evolution. It's evolution's last cigarette.
You know what one casket said to the other?
No.
Is that you coughing?
Oh, man. All right. We definitely need to put an end to this. Yeah.
That's probably a good time to end the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a couple other stories we're not going to get to, but I there was one on quantum physics can confirm where you're located. It's interesting. And that was a study just this last March 30th. So much good stuff, Doug. Maybe we'll close with this short we did on Tom Cruise, or maybe not, but yeah.
Okay. We did a short on Tom Cruise?
Well, it's
Are you saying Tom Cruise is short? Because he doesn't take to that. He doesn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
No.
Anyways, this is on the proteins not sharing.
Oh, that's right.
So let's play that clip, that short.
Mr. Raw, do you admit that Darwin's tree of life is wrong? No comment. I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Your Honor, these are catalogs of genes such as topoisomerase and zinc finger from both NIH and the ENCODE Project. You'll find there are no examples of common ancestors to these genes, proving evolution is false. I submit these as creationist exhibits Alpha and Bravo.
You snotty little creationist. You and your pretty white suits don't realize that evolution saves lives.
Do you admit to saying that proteins do not have a common ancestor?
You darn right I did.
Your Honor, I moved to an immediate Article 38 Omaha to stop teaching the fairy tale of evolution. The atheist has rights.
Well, that didn't sound much like Tom Cruise, but it did look like him.
Okay, yeah. How'd you like the impersonations?
Yeah, I was very impressed.
It was
impressed.
All one person doing that.
good stuff. Okay.
All right, so for my co-host Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.